You're listening to CKLN 88.1 FM on Prisoners' Justice Day, Tuesday, August 10th. On the show today, we're going to be looking at the discrimination and stigma that families of prisoners experience when visiting loved ones behind bars. Introduced by the Correctional Service of Canada in 1995 as a weapon in the ongoing war on drugs, the ion scan machine is used to test visitors' belongings for traces of illegal drugs before they can enter penitentiary. It's notorious for being inaccurate. The machine routinely gives false positive results. We'll be hearing from a family member who shares her experiences being barred at the gate due to positive hits on the ion scan machine. But first, we're joined by Lloyd Withers from the Canadian Families and Corrections Network.
The ion scanner is a piece of electronic equipment that is used to test an article of clothing, or sometimes it's a swab that's placed against the skin of the person. And the swab is placed inside a machine that tests for trace amounts of illegal substances.
Now, there's also a lot of questions around the accuracy of the machine. I've heard a lot of personal stories of people that have tested positive falsely through the machine. You know, even little children that have tested positive, their mittens have tested positive for traces of drugs. And I've also, you know, I've heard things like, you know, a large percentage of paper currency contains traces of cocaine or other narcotics. What are your thoughts on how the machine works and how reliable it is?
Yeah, you're quite right. I mean, sometimes even the money you'd get from a bank machine, because of where it's been, can contain traces of substances that are banned inside CSC. The position that at least CSC has taken when I've raised the question is that there's no such thing as a false positive. The ion scanner is simply a machine that detects something. The difficulty comes in terms of what a hit or how a hit is interpreted and what it means. And I think that there are a number of ways that a hit can occur. Someone may be, in fact, trying to smuggle something into the institution, but I also think that it can be user error on the part of the person using the equipment. It could be workplace or workspace contamination. For example, if a family member lays their ID or another piece of personal equipment on the area around the ion scanner, that if a previous visitor had contaminated that area, then there's a chance that there'd be that the machine would detect something. I think another thing is the machine calibration itself, and I guess because of the user error and workspace contamination and the machine calibration, that CFCN in its recent recommendations to CSC has suggested and requested ongoing staff training for those persons who are using the ion scanner so that best practices are used. I think the other thing that happens with the ion scanner is that the ion scanner has the ability to inappropriately identify non-banned substances as banned or illegal substances. I think you know, that list of banned substances that are picked up in that way, or like that list exists, but because of the security reasons, both inside CSC and at Canada's airports, that list isn't available. Other ways that I think those hits are coming is through casual contact or use with a banned or illegal substance, or even significant use of a banned or illegal substance. And like I said, the other is that the person might in fact be trying to smuggle something in. However, all of those things being said, to take a positive hit and automatically accuse or assume that a family member is attempting to smuggle something in, I think is an error. I mean, CSC uses what's called a threat risk assessment. It interviews the family member before a decision is made to terminate a contact visit because of a positive hit or a false positive hit on the ion scanner. But I think too often the first assumption is, okay, the machine did something, so the family member must be trying to smuggle something in. I don't think that's an accurate assessment. I think it puts all kinds of pressure on family members, and it assumes that family members are guilty of something simply because all they're trying to do is to maintain contact with someone that they love inside an institution. And I guess being targeted simply because they're family members. Family members requested what I've called a democratization of search procedures. Family members are not the only ways that drugs come into the institution, and family members have said, frankly, why should we go through these search procedures when other persons do not? Therefore, they've said all persons who enter into this institution should have to go through the same security procedures, whether it's searches, putting personal property through the X-ray machines, and going through the ion scan process.
So that's not happening right now. What you're telling me is guards don't have to go through the same machine or the same process that families have to.
All staff members are requested to put their personal items through the X-ray machine and to walk through a metal detector. But in terms of the ion scan technology, no.
You touched on this a bit, just about the impact that denying visiting rights has on families and on prisoners. I mean, having visits is one of the few opportunities that prisoners have to actually maintain contact with the outside world, right? And you have families who are often traveling far distances to visit their loved ones in prison. So, I'm just imagining you get to the front gate and you're denied and you have to turn all the way back. I mean, what kind of impact does that have on the actual family member, and what kind of impact does that have on prisoners as well?
Oh, family members can be just devastated by the process. I mean, to travel hundreds of miles, money may be difficult for some family members. They're choosing not to eat in order to afford to come down to, for example, the Kingston area prisons. Some family members, like I say, are choosing to pay the limited money they have for the John Howard Society bus that comes from the Toronto area, from the GTA down to Kingston area institutions. They're paying that bill rather than eating for that day, simply because for them visits are so important. It's critical. I mean, they're visiting the people that they love. And the same is true with the person inside. I mean, visits are critical. It's critical for the person while they're inside the institution. I mean, it's a connection to the real world. I mean, prison is not normal. Family members are a connection to what is real. They're also a connection to hope. There's someone out there that cares. And finally, family members are important when a person is released from prison and goes back out into the community. If there's family contact, I mean, there's a greater likelihood of the person not going back to prison. Family makes a huge difference to persons inside. So for the kids, I mean, someone who's inside, a prisoner who's inside that is a parent, is still a parent, as I kind of say it this way. A father in prison is still a father, with an important role to play in his family and with the children, with his children. The national consultation that we completed, we made 51 recommendations about changes in terms of response, attitude issues, policy, practice related to families. As a result of those recommendations, national headquarters of CSC established a working group to deal with the recommendations. And I was blown away because the working group has recommended action on 50% of the recommendations that came out of that national consultation talking with family members, and family members had the opportunity to say, this is what we want, this is what we need.
I actually think I looked at a part of that policy document, and one of the things I actually wasn't going to touch on this in the interview, but I'm really curious to actually know, is around just the use of visiting centers. You know, there's talk of making them more child-friendly, and there, in the policy document, and use the word humanize the prison. And I have different feelings about this personally. On the one hand, I think, great, if coming to visit someone inside is made that much less painful for someone, then that's great. That's a really positive change, right? And if it's, if it's a less traumatic experience, especially for children, then I see that as, a movement in a good direction. On the other hand, my concern, I guess, is that those kinds of changes can help mask what's really there. In my opinion, a prison is a prison, right? I mean, there's only so far that you can go to say, to make things nice on the surface level, how do you see some of these changes, you know, improvements to visiting centers, those kinds of things within a restorative justice perspective?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because I as well support alternatives to incarceration. I think incarceration should be a last resort. With respect to the visiting area, it's important, and why we're working towards having visitor centers is not to make crime or prison normal. I mean, it's not. But what we're trying to do by having volunteers work in the VNC areas of a variety of Ontario federal institutions is to make family normal and to make visiting experience normal, particularly for the children. As I said right off the bat, and as you said, I personally believe that incarceration should be a last resort. I think there's all kinds of other ways to be restorative, and I think that we should be pursuing those different avenues.
You can reach the Canadian Families and Corrections Network through their website at www.sympatico.ca/CFCN/. Our second guest is a family member who shares her experience of being barred from visiting her husband in prison due to false positive results on the ion scan machine.
He was an inmate at a federal institution, and I visited him there for a couple of months. I had several ion scanner tests that tested negative, and then on two occasions I was tested positive, once for heroin and once for cocaine. The first time that the reading came back positive, I was really shocked and very upset and couldn't understand why that had happened. I had a very negative experience with the supervisor. The guard took me to see the supervisor, and although I tried to reason with him, he basically said that the machine was correct and that I would have to leave, and that if I tried to come back on the property, that I would be arrested and charged. So I left, and then a review board hearing was held a few days subsequent to that, and I was allowed to come back to the prison, at which point I was tested by a different guard and tested negative. 4 days after that, I came back again, was tested by the guard who had tested me for positive for the first time, and it came up positive again, only this time it was for cocaine. And the second time I dealt with a supervisor who was somewhat more reasonable, and I persuaded him to allow me a supervised visit for an hour. After that visit, I was called by the visiting coordinator, who told me that my visiting privileges had been suspended for 90 days. After that, I wrote a couple of letters to the warden explaining that I don't do drugs and I had no drugs on my person, and that on both occasions I had volunteered to be searched and have my car searched, and that those searches were not performed and no explanation was given as to why they wouldn't be performed. The second time that it happened, I was threatened with the OPP, but indeed the OPP was never called. And after those letters reached the warden, I did receive a letter from him indicating that because they weren't sure of the circumstances that had led to the positive reading, that I would be allowed to have closed visits, and that gradually we could get back to supervised visits and then to what they call normal visiting privileges, but that would occur over a period of time, dependent on the results of other ion scanning. So, fortunately, I'm not dealing with the situation anymore because my partner was released, but that's what we were up against if he had had to stay there.
So what you're saying, I mean, they take the ion scan results, like you testing positive, and that's evidence, that's sort of irrefutable proof that you have intentions of bringing drugs into the prison, right? I mean, that's their perspective.
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, that's how... They won't come out and say that. What they say is, we're not accusing you of bringing drugs in. We're just saying that you have come into contact with them. But it's pretty ridiculous because whether you've come into contact with them or you're actually bringing them in, you're treated the same way, which is not to be allowed to come back to visit. At no point would a supervisor come out and say to me, look, we think you're bringing in drugs. There was a lot of innuendo. One of the guards suggested to my husband that I was bringing drugs in for him and that he was being muscled, because neither of us take drugs, that he was being muscled so that I could provide drugs for someone else in the prison. And that went beyond innuendo. That was an accusation. But officially, there was no accusation made. Officially, their concern was that I had come into contact with it, and they have no way of proving whether or not I was actually bringing something in. And of course, they have lots of ways, but for some reason, I still don't understand they didn't use those.
Okay, so from what I've heard about the machines, I've heard a few stories of, you know, kids testing positive on their mittens and stuff like that. What do you know about how accurate or inaccurate the machines actually are?
Well, I know that while I was there, there were other people who tested positive for different drugs or the same drugs. There's all kinds of controversy around it. And the information that you're given as a visitor is really conflicts with what you're being told by the authorities. In other words, what a guard might tell you is completely different from what the coordinator of the visiting program might tell you, which is completely different from what the warden might tell you. So it's really impossible to get accurate information in the first place about how the machine works. And it can't be working. The number of people who go through there and, you know, you do see little kids testing positive. You do see old grandmothers testing positive. And there's just no way that they're bringing drugs in to the prison. And it's not an accurate indication of somebody bringing stuff in anyway. Even if it was 100% accurate, which I don't believe it is, all it can prove is that you have somehow come into contact with some residue, which, as I understand it, can be picked up by picking up a $5 bill. One of the guards told me that if I walked into a bar and put my hand on the bar and the person there before me had cocaine on his hands, that would leave enough residue on me that I would be tested positive. So, in other words, you're being punished for walking into a bar and putting your hand on a counter, you know.
So, I mean, there's people getting residue and stuff from paper money, or, like you said, if you put your hands on a bar.
That's right.
And it also, I mean, say someone does do drugs, you know, like say they are a user outside, it doesn't have anything to do with whether or not they're going to actually bring drugs or threaten, you know, the security of the prison, right?
That's right. Well, and I was told on a couple of occasions, look, we don't care if you do drugs. We don't care if you're a drug addict. We just care if you're bringing something in here to our prisoners.
So what was the impact of that on you, being punished and not being allowed to visit?
Well, the first time it happened, I was really shocked, and I was really upset, and I spent the whole drive back crying. The second time, I was really, really angry, and I began to wonder at that point if it had something to do with the way the test was being done. It seemed too much of a coincidence to me that I had a positive test in between the two negative ones, and it was making me pretty crazy by then. There are stories circulating amongst the inmates, and so then they get to the visitors, that there are ways to avoid testing positive, and they include wearing rubber gloves when you touch things. And I was, you know, sterilizing everything in my environment and wearing rubber gloves all the time. And I started to be afraid to go out of my apartment because I started to imagine that there were just drugs everywhere. And, you know, at no point did it make me feel guilty because I hadn't done anything. What it made me was really angry, and it made me feel pretty powerless. And it just, it was very, very confusing because people who work in corrections, the official mandate of corrections includes the importance of having visitors for the inmates and the importance of community contact. And it just was, it just was not consistent with treating visitors this way, telling me that I would not be allowed to see him for 3 months was just insane. It was just absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's part of corrections mandate. It's also law. Under the Corrections Conditional Release Act, prisoners are entitled to have contact with their families and their friends, and entitled to open visits, you know, unless there's, you know, evidence to support reasons why they should be denied those.
Absolutely, and there was no evidence. I volunteered on the second occasion again to be searched, and it was a holiday weekend, and so they didn't have any female staff on, so they couldn't do a search. And I said, "Don't you people have dogs? You know, can't you?" I really, really wanted to just get it cleared up, you know. And well, no, we don't. We can't do that today. So it's almost, you kind of feel like they're trying to trap you because they won't give you an opportunity to vindicate yourself. My personal belief is that they're all in love with that machine, that they've spent a huge amount of money on it, and that they have to justify its existence. And there's just really, really inadequate training around using it. It's not used as part of, what did they tell me? They told me, I got a letter from the warden who said that the ion scanner was only used as part of the testing, it was only a piece of the puzzle. But that's just not true, because it was the only thing they did. And even though I know that other people have requested a search, I mean, you have to be pretty desperate to request a search. But in that situation, that's how you feel.
You mentioned the drug dogs, and one thing that I've heard is that the drug dogs actually can't differentiate between legal and illegal drugs. So, you know, if there's codeine or something like that, they will react to that.
Well, see, that's the other thing about the ion scanner. That's very, very controversial. Some of the staff told me that it could detect legal drugs. Others of the staff told me that it could not. In other words, if a person is testing positive for heroin, it could be any number of legal narcotics, you know, prescription drugs. And then the next day someone says, no, 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 that's not true. Ultimately, who knows, but that's certainly a good possibility. There's also a possibility that it, for some reason, it reacts to certain, you know, household chemicals or perfumes, there are stories about it reacting to babies who've had baby wipes used to clean them. So it's impossible to get accurate information from the staff because all of the information that you get is conflicting. So what it comes down to is who knows? Who knows if the machine works in the first place? Who knows if it's being properly used? Each guard who tested me a little bit differently. It's just so, so unscientific. I think it's become very, very subjective. And so I think that if a guard wanted to find some residue of something on a person, that would probably happen.
I think you mentioned a few moments ago about the training that guards receive. From your experience, do you think it's possible that guards don't know how to properly use the machine? Is there a possibility for things to get cross-contaminated?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. At one point, a guard dropped the swab on the floor. And because I was very upset at the time, I can't swear 100% that he didn't change his gloves after he did it. But I don't think he did. And certainly there's a lot of controversy around that. In one instance, I asked the guard to test himself and he refused, which indicates something to me. There was a reason that he would not test himself.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the guards don't have to go through the ion scan when they start their shift at work.
They don't.
So, I mean, it's also a way of saying, you know, when drugs are in the institution, who can we point the finger at, right?
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There are also a number of people who are in and out of the building all the time who don't get scanned. You know, people who are doing construction in the building or whatever. It's supposed to be random. But, of course, once you've tested positive, then you get tested every time. So it isn't random at all. And I believe it has something to do with how the accuracy of the machine also can reflect how often it's cleaned, because particles get trapped in it if it's not cleaned enough. There are some people who try to make sure that they're the first visitors there, because the theory is that if you go in first, then the machine hasn't been contaminated by other visitors.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really pretty creepy. But then you also don't know if it's been cleaned. They say that they clean it every day. There are people who say that it should be cleaned in between each use, not just once a day.
What can you share about how this has affected your husband as well, and how you think it might affect prisoners who are denied visits from their family?
When it first happened, he was really, really angry. His hearing was coming up, and he had a lot of anxiety around that, and I had driven quite a ways to get there, and he was really, really angry. And quite frankly, I think that because both of us are fairly strong individuals, and because I didn't take it lying down, because I did try to talk to the supervisor and made some progress, albeit slow progress, but I was making some progress, and I wrote to the warden, and just before he was actually released from the prison, the warden had conceded to give us closed visits for three consecutive closed visits, and then to kind of reassess the situation so that, in fact, it was being treated as an appeal. And you have to, when people are in a situation like that, it's so easy to drop into feeling powerless. And I think that people who don't have the resources to really stand up for their rights, they're toast. I mean, they just don't go back. They don't go back to visit. And then the guys who are in there obviously are going to be angry. They're going to be depressed. They're going to feel guilty. I can't imagine what it would be like for them. I know that we coped because we're fighters, but lots of people aren't. And those are the people that I would be really concerned about. I think, you know, it has had fairly long-lasting effects on me, having gone through that experience. And for someone who isn't able to, exert any kind of power or stand up for herself, it would just be impossible to go back, I would think.
I'd like to thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
For more information about the ion scanner, visit www.justicebehindthewalls.net. This site offers an entire chapter devoted to families and the ion scan machine. And if you're a family member or a friend of a prisoner, there's a group that gets together once a week to share experiences and offer resources. Circle of Hope meets at the Passan Rittenhouse office at 489 College Street, Suite 500, from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. on Thursdays. Call Joan Ruja at 416-972-9992 for more information. And we have more Prisoners Justice Day programming coming up at 11 a.m. right through till 11 p.m. tonight. To hear more on families of prisoners, tune in from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. You're listening to CKLN 88.1 FM.